from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the circuit courts are full. Hearings on the coronavirus happen on Capitol Hill, and a biblical response to the erasure of history. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. In our first segment today, we take a look at an important milestone as the Senate confirmed the 200th judge of the Trump presidency. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
I'm delighted to be with you. And yes, you're so correct. We've been hard at work at Judiciary Committee. And Chairman Lindsey Graham, Leader McConnell, the President, we've made it a priority to fill these judicial seats. And so now the circuit court is completely filled, and we're continuing to work through these district court openings.
It must be significant because I've seen comments from Democratic senators complaining about the laser focus that Republicans have had on filling these court vacancies.
Well, they do complain about it, but they also know that we need to have these slots filled so that the court is working. And, of course, we want to have these slots filled not with activist judges, but with originalists and constitutionalists who realize we are a nation of laws. We abide by the rule of law in this country.
And that certainly was driven home last week with, I think it was an aberrant decision by the Supreme Court on redefining the term sex. I think the American people want judges who simply adhere to the law and provide their role according to the Constitution, which is not to legislate, not to make law, but simply to interpret it according to the Constitution.
That is so correct. And people will always, when I'm in Tennessee, I will have people that bring up the topic of judges and the fact that the activism by judges or the different interpretations or interpreting something because they think it's a change in the times, that this is something that frustrates people. We have a constitution and we have the rule of law, and if we stick to that and abide by it, then everybody knows what the rules of the game are, and it's not going to be changing it to suit a certain period of time.
And that's extremely important when you talk about, and I like the analogy, the rules of the game. Because if you're playing a game and someone arbitrarily changes the rules, you get frustrated. And either you want to quit or you want to just go ahead and make your own rules up as well. And I think it's very dangerous when you have the highest court in the land changing the rules by redefining words, legislating, which is beyond their capacity, from according to the Constitution. And that frustrates the American people, as you talk about the folks in Tennessee that talk about that. I mean, I hear it all the time from people all across the country. And I think it adds to the lawlessness and the chaos that we see in our country today.
Once you start down that slippery slope of saying, because today people think this, and yesterday they thought that, and tomorrow they may think something else, and you look at that situational application, then there is not that constancy. And our founders, our brilliant founders, gave us these documents and gave us this Bill of Rights and gave us this underpinning to point the way. It is a constancy that people can say, if I do this, I will be able to do that. And they know with certainty that that's what the rule of law is built on. So to do these contemporary interpretations or interpretations of convenience is something that is very difficult for our citizenry.
Right. And if we want to change the, you know, update it to make it, current with modern definitions, we can do that. It's called the Congress. It goes through the Congress. The president signs it. That's how we do it. It can be done. But the fact is, the Congress has entertained those ideas of redefining the term sex, and they've refused to do so. And here the court took it on. That's not the focus. I want to focus these judges, and I want to go back to the issue that the Democrats are complaining about this. But I find that a little ironic that they would complain about this since they don't want you to do anything else, like vote on legislation. A very significant piece of legislation yesterday, I mentioned at the opening of the program, one of your colleagues, Senator Tim Scott, introduced legislation that had the backing of the Republicans and two Democrats that would address the issue of police brutality, which brought about this, the protests, and I'm going to focus on the peaceful protests, but there was other things going on with it as well. Clearly, we all agree what happened with George Floyd was wrong, needed to be addressed. The president's addressed it, and the Senate was moving forward to address it. But it was blocked because the Democrats these are not my words. Tim Scott went to the floor, who's an African-American, and said, basically, the Democrats don't want this issue to be resolved by Republicans.
That is correct. And if your listeners have not listened to Tim's floor speech, I encourage them to listen to that speech. It is one of the great speeches of our time. He did a beautiful job. And Tim's remarks were absolutely just riveting. And he talked about, he didn't think it was the content of the bill, it was who brought the bill forward, and that it was a conservative Black man that brought this bill forward. And so the Democrats refused to vote to proceed, not to pass the bill. This was to proceed
to a
discussion on the bill. And Tim offered them 20 amendments to the bill, and they would not under any circumstances come to the floor and debate police reforms. I think they should be so ashamed of their conduct, and I hope that we can next week get back on this bill and have a discussion.
It was an excellent speech. In fact, as I read it and listened to part of it, it was like, this is something that the history books are recorded. And I want to play a clip of just the opening of what he had to say, because I thought he set the stage quite well. Play the second clip we have of Senator Scott.
Mr. President, there's a scripture in the Bible in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 33, somewhere around verse 6. And that scripture talks about a watchman on a wall. And his job is to simply say, there's danger coming. Very important job. The watchman's job is to simply say, there is danger coming. There is danger coming. I want us to hear this clearly, because as we look out in the streets of America and we see more unrest and we see more challenging situations, realize that there is danger coming. The watchman's responsibility is to call out the danger, and as the bloodshed happens, the blood, according to Ezekiel, will not be on the hands of the watchman. But if he does not shout out, if he does not articulate that there is danger coming, then the blood is on his hands. Mr. President, there is danger coming. We are in dangerous times. The source of this danger is not the failure of this bill on this floor at this time. Nope. This is merely a symptom of the danger that I believe is right in front of us. This is only a symptom of a much deeper issue, a systemic problem.
Senator Blackburn, we're out of time, but I want to get your final thoughts on this. Did he get the attention of your colleagues yesterday?
My hope is that the Democrats will come back to the table and will see the danger ahead of us and will work with us on police reform.
Senator Marsha Blackburn, I want to thank you for your leadership, and I want to thank you for joining us today. And keep working on those judges. You are doing an outstanding job. Thanks so much for joining
us.
You can find out more about Marsha Blackburn when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And I want to let you know that even in these challenging times in our country, it is an honor to serve you and your family through this broadcast. Every day, FRC experts work on multiple fronts to uphold biblical truth and equip citizens like you to engage the culture. There is much work to be done, and with our important fiscal year-end deadline just days away, your timely gift can make all the difference. Visit TonyPerkins.com to help us fulfill our mission to be your voice for biblical principles and impact even more lives with the truth. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
We all can benefit from a good lecture. They can inform you and grow you. Well, Family Research Council's new weekly podcast features lectures by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast addresses issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, the House Committee on Energy and Commerce held hearings on the Trump administration's response to the pandemic. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the hearings is Dr. Michael Burgess, representative for the 26th District of Texas.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thank you so much for having me on. So you'll be glad to know that hypocrisy is live and well in our nation's capital, and you saw it on full display during our hearing today.
It really was. In fact, it was fascinating as I watched parts of the hearing. And, of course, they're now doing hearings, virtual hearings, where members are joining by different forms of technology. And I noticed that the members have challenges, just as everybody else does, in making it all work. But bottom line, was this just an effort to try to go after the president in this administration's response to the coronavirus?
Yes, and let me tell you why that is so unsettling to me, because I was one of the ones last January who said, I think this is a problem in China, and we got to pay attention to it. I couldn't get our committee that is supposed to be the number one committee that's be front and center for a pandemic, I couldn't get anyone to even talk to me about it in January, February, or the first half of March. We had hearings on everything under the sun except for this. And now we want to convene this hearing today and criticize the president for not being perhaps as on the spot that he should have been. Well, where the heck were we? Chairman Pallone, where the heck was Chairman Pallone during all of this? What, we had plenty of time in February. We could have gone back and looked at the bill we'd just passed a few months before that was to deal with pandemic and all hazard preparedness. And we didn't even have the curiosity, as this plague was beginning to percolate over in China, we didn't even have the curiosity to bring it up and say, hey, did we get it right? Did we do the right thing? Are we on the right track here? No, let's go on and investigate flavored tobacco or horse racing or whatever else we were after that day.
Yeah, selective memory. In fact, I know you were on this program talking about it back then as well. In fact, I should have, in anticipating you coming on today, should have pulled the clip from back then where you were raising concerns about this, not an alarmist, but suggesting that we need to be looking at this, that this was a serious threat. As we're into this now, and there are, talks about how we keep this from spreading. In fact, I had an infectious disease doctor on yesterday saying that where we are right now, best way forward, continue the social distancing, keeping our distance from one another, physical right. distance, keeping using the mask until we get to a point where we have the vaccine widely available, that there's just going to have to be some alteration of how we conduct business and how we do things.
And our social interactions. And certainly people do need to be mindful of that. May I just point out to you, though, that and this was really hit home for me today in this hearing that we had. FDA is there front and center. Dr. Fauci is there front and center. And things they're talking about were the types of responses I could never get out of the previous administration. Look, we're talking about the FDA is the Project Warp Speed. Lots of work being done on vaccines as well as other viral countermeasures, but vaccines gets all the headlines, and appropriately so. But look, we've got several companies that are working on candidate vaccines, and the head of the FDA has said, and we will license the production of this vaccine prior to its approval. Now, there is a risk to that. It is a financial risk for the company that decides to go ahead and proceed with the manufacture before the final approval is given. But on the other side of this, wouldn't it be wrong to have a vaccine that finally gets through all the hurdles on the regulatory side, and now we say, yeah, and let's go ahead and start making some of this next week? No, you're going to need it right then and there. The minute it gets the green light, you want it to be available for people. And so this is what companies are standing up to do. This is what the agency now has been forward-leaning into this. Credit Dr. Hahn and credit Dr. Fauci. He made it very, very clear in our hearing today. This is not about taking a risk with people. This is about a company taking a financial risk so that it will be prepared to deliver what the people are going to need when it's finally approved. That's vastly different from what we had, say, in Ebola. August of 2014, we had a candidate vaccine that looked very good. Do you know when it was finally approved? December of 2019. The epidemic was long since done by that point.
You know, Dr. Burgess, it to me, it's quite obvious that this administration, and look, they're not perfect, but they don't get credit for any of the positive things that they do. As you pointed out very clearly, the rapid pace which they have moved forward with testing. I mean, remember, that was an issue just a couple of months ago. Oh, we don't have enough tests. Now we're at the point we're going to soon be at 40 to 50 million tests a month. I mean, that's pretty significant, is it not?
It's absolutely significant, and it's certainly key for being able to contain whether it's a continuation of the first wave or the second wave or however we choose to designate it. It's going to be key in containing the illness until such time as you get a vaccine.
So from your perspective, how has the administration, the CDC, the White House, how have they handled this?
Well, I will tell you, this may have been part of our conversation earlier, that when the administration stepped forward, and I was really concerned, the end of January, they came and presented to us the all of the public health experts that you see repeatedly. I was like, you need to stop travel from China until we figure out what the heck is going on. Well, the president did that. Now, in fact, our hearing today, he was criticized because he didn't block American citizens from coming back in. However, they did quarantine American citizens, and they got criticized for that at the time, for quarantining people for 2 weeks. You're right. It's almost like they can't do anything right. And do remember, they also have 97% negative coverage in most of the news shows except for yours.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Burgess, anything that you learned new today? Or anything that raises concern for you?
Well, I'd say one of the new concepts, and I think Dr. Fauci, and I just referenced this, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Hahn at the FDA both talked about how, yeah, there'd be a risk taken with the vaccine, but it'd be financial risk, not people risk. And I don't know that I'd heard it expressed quite in those terms before today. I'm so concerned about the fact that we've got community spread in some parts of Texas. That worries me. I do know that there's no way in the world we can go back to that total lockdown situation that we were in March and April. Number one, people just aren't – we're going to lose the consent of the governed here if we're not careful, because people just aren't going to stand for it. But at the same time, you do worry about people who are at risk and people who are vulnerable. So a lot of my questions were centered around how do we make sure we get in areas where you have community spread, and right now that seems to be in the lower Rio Grande Valley in Texas, how do you ensure sure that you have the proper amount of personal protective equipment at the level of the nursing home, the congregate facilities, the long-term care facilities? How do you ensure that you have the proper amount of protective equipment so that those populations are not put at greater risk than they already are? And there were some good answers, and I was grateful for the type of work that I think it was Admiral Jouard, who's the principal one who's been involved in that. But yeah, I was encouraged by what I heard from our witnesses today.
Well, we're not out of the woods yet, but we can see some daylight, so it's encouraging. Dr. Burgess, thanks so much. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Absolutely. And do our part. Each of us do our part. I just say keep our distance, wash our hands, and when necessary, wear a mask. Thanks so much for joining us, Congressman Burgess. Always great to talk with you.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
You can find out more about Michael Burgess when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program as we quickly approach our fiscal year end. Just visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate button. That's tonyperkins.com.
What are you reading this season? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by policy experts, FRC staff, and outside contributors. Read about a range of topics from world abortion leaders exploit pandemic to advance self-managed abortions, and online outreach, how to continue fulfilling the Great Commission during the coronavirus. Stand for truth and stay informed at frcblog.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. You know, every nation has good and bad parts to their history, including America. But with so much of this country's history being torn down, Tony Perkins took some time on Wednesday to address this important issue.
All right, talking about this wave across the country, literally dozens of monuments, statues removed, defaced. And some might be inclined to say, this is not my debate. I'm going to sit this one out. Well, that's exactly what they want you to do. It makes it easier for those who are using a legitimate concern. And let me underscore, there are some legitimate concerns here. I think slavery is a tremendous blight on the American experiment of freedom. I believe also, I would throw into this, this hasn't been a topic of discussion as of late, but I think our breach of treaties with the Indians is a blight on our record. And these are issues of legitimate concern. But there are those who are taking this legitimate concern and using it for an illegitimate cause, the destruction of our country. Yes, you heard me right. There are those who want to destroy our republic. Now, I'm not talking about those who are peacefully protesting, who I may or may not agree with on all matters, but I support their right to march in the streets and bring attention to the issues at hand peacefully. I support it. Even though I may disagree with them, I support that right. That's what makes America great. But there are some who are using the peaceful protesters as a smokescreen for their own agenda. And don't think for a moment that appeasement will come when mayors and governors step aside and allow the destruction of statues, or has been the case in some jurisdictions where officials themselves have removed the historical figures at the demand of the mobs. If anything, the attempts at appeasement will only increase the demand for more. A case in point, Jeffrey Sean King, the co-founder of Real Justice PAC and promoter of the Black Lives Matter movement, tweeted out this week, quote, and I quote, "All murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends should also come down. They are a gross form of white supremacy, created as tools of oppression, racist propaganda. They should all come down," end quote. Now, I hate to disturb his reality, but Mary wasn't European. Now, the bigger question here is, does the Bible give us any guidance on how we should look at these real and troubling issues? I think so. One of the most significant arguments defending the veracity of Scripture is that it does not candy coat the history of God's people. Look at King David. How many world leaders would pen such revealing personal thoughts And how many apologists of their leaders would include the lurid details of David's failings? Now, consider even the lineage of Jesus. It includes Judah, who had sex with his daughter-in-law, thinking she was a prostitute. It includes a prostitute and an adulteress. Is it celebrating those immoral behaviors? No. It is celebrating the power of a redemptive God. Real, honest history includes the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is the story of America. The story of history is one of redemption, not perfection. Consider the Apostle Paul, one of the most revered followers of Christ among believers today. In fact, how many churches are named after Paul? I mean, think about St. Paul Cathedral in London. This despite the fact that Paul got his start by killing believers. What about Peter, who denied Jesus three times and abandoned him? Do Christians seek to remove these men from the record of Christianity? No. Or aren't we then celebrating the evil or the mistakes they made? No, we're recognizing them in the redemptive power and the redemptive power of Jesus Christ and the greater good of God. As Christians, we understand that man is fallen and he fails. But we also understand the redemptive nature of God and his plan of sanctification. Paul said it this way in Philippians 3:12, "Not that I have already attained or am already perfected, but I press on, that I may lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus also laid hold of me." See, we're not a perfect union. But we're moving in that direction, and that is a part of our history. What we are seeing is significant, and it is dangerous. Historically, on very few occasions do statues topple alone without governments going with them. This is a time for us to stand firm and strong, acknowledging the failures of America's past, but also embracing its promise for the future. And not allowing those that would seek to purge us of our history in this elusive effort of a utopia, like so many others have tried in communist Russia, Europe, and elsewhere. This is the American experiment. We have to defend it.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. And remember, you can find out more about all of our guests at tonyperkins.com. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.